Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to violence.
Welcome to Lost in the Static.
The final episode in this pit of a studio of yours. We get a whole new studio pit.
Yeah, we got
you guys here.
Yeah, we got a whole new pit. I'm looking forward to it myself.
Let's see how long before it turns into the pit that this is. I'm giving it 4 days.
I'm giving it 15 minutes.
Because you guys, those pictures he posted last year, let's just say he did a lot of cleaning before he posted those.
No, I didn't.
Dawn did.
I'm going to give credit where credit is due. My wife came in. She was bored one day and there was a whole lot of cleaning, so I'll post pictures of the new studio when we get there.
All right. In the meantime, why don't you guys go to AdamandEve.com, use the promo code STATIC to get 50% off of a single item, to get 3 free DVDs, free shipping in the United States, and a free mystery gift. All you have to do is use the promo code STATIC at AdamandEve.com.
You know what's funny? We did the Adam and Eve promo last week, and I don't think we mentioned the promo code.
I did, because I'm not stupid.
Okay, good.
You forgot, but I'm not stupid.
I forgot, but that's okay. So I also want to get a spoiler warning right off the top of the show. We are going to talk about BioShock Infinite. So if you're starting that game, or I'm still relatively early in the game, so I'm only going to talk about what I've encountered, but yeah, if you're relatively early in that game and you don't want plot spoiled or anything like that, this may be an episode to save for later.
Well, because you got me thinking about it last week when you talked about Mass Effect and you said BioShock instead of BioWare.
Right.
And whatnot. BioShock is being called racist for some of the things in the new BioShock Infinite game. And so tonight we're going to talk about racial stereotypes in media. And by media, I don't mean the news or things. I mean movies and video games, that
movies,
kind of
video
things.
Games, TV, comic
right.
books, et cetera, cartoons.
Right. So from what I understand of the BioShock Infinite plot, it takes place in like an alternate reality where blacks were never emancipated and are not seen as actual people. And most of the main characters are basically white, hardcore Republicans as we know them today. And from what I understand, the point is just how easy it is to dehumanize people and how really racist we actually are. And they're being called racist for this. You lost me.
Okay, the game takes place in 1912.
I couldn't remember when.
It takes place in 1912 in a floating city called Columbia. And Columbia it's kind of a cross between American democracy and Nazism. Because you have an aristocracy and you have the whites that are on top and let's make it even more specific, the rich white people that are on top of that aristocracy, and they run the city, and they're kind of the coat of varnish on a very, very messed up house. It's like a house that's falling apart, but it's got a very nice coat of paint on it. And black people are emancipated, but not in Colombia. They are in the U.S., but that was one of the things that the prophet, the leader of Colombia, was like, no, Lincoln's wrong about this. And that's one of the reasons why it seceded from the Union. One of. There are also portrayals of Native Americans that are very negative in the game as well. Your character, the lead character, Booker DeWitt, took part in the battle at Wounded Knee. And, you know, they talk about the Red Menace, meaning Native Americans.
Communism.
They also talk about the Irish problem.
Fucking drunks.
Which, yeah, but that's basically how they're portrayed, as drunken baby factories. And, so there's racism there. And there's even a key point in the game where you make a decision to throw a baseball at an interracial couple or not. And it's a major plot point. So that's as much as, you know, basically this interracial couple is been caught, been chastised, and as a punishment, they raffle off a chance to take a baseball and basically bean them in the head to death.
Stoning.
Yeah, it's modern stoning.
Well, the game is getting all sorts of shit over it. So one of my things was, and I don't know if this was a coincidence that this came out at the same time or not, I ran across a list of the most offensive characters in movies, which I got to admit, Scott, I was more offended at this list than what they wanted me to be offended at on this list. Because for one thing, nobody who looks at these racial stereotypes in movies ever goes, put it in context of not only when it was made, but when it takes place.
Right.
For example, I can't stand racial sensitivity in like a period piece where there wasn't any. For instance, like Captain America, the First Avenger. Nick Fury, black man in this reality, was fighting alongside Captain America in World War II. Didn't happen like that. Black men were not on the front lines like that. I know you want to be all inclusive and progressive, not historical. I see so many movies that do that. That it's a World War II tale, and we've got blacks fighting alongside whites. No.
No, it didn't.
No.
It didn't happen that way.
So, I'm sorry, you have to make it an all-white regiment to be accurate.
Right.
That doesn't make you racist for not including other races.
That was one of the progressive things about the conflict in Vietnam and the Korean War. They let blacks onto the front lines. And yes, there was, you know, oh God, what was that movie that just came out about the black fighter pilots in World War II?
That tanked real bad too.
Yes, yes. Yes, blacks played an important part in World War II, and there were black regiments that did fight, but they were all black or they were all white. You did not bunk together. You did not eat together. It was not integrated. Like I said, that was one of the progressive things when it came to Vietnam and the Korean War.
It's the same thing when you look at those old Warner Brothers cartoons, those really, really ones that, there's no other way to put it, they are racist.
Yes.
But at the time, that's how the Japanese were seen by the... Now, this is the distinction. I got into a big fight with someone on Facebook over this, who he refused to accept the distinction that is what the pervasive attitude in America was. For instance, he called Birth of a Nation an overtly racist piece of propaganda. He's not wrong about that.
No,
it is.
No, it is.
But at the same time, that was the pervasive attitude of blacks by whites in the majority of America.
Yes.
That cannot be discounted. Mm-hmm. That doesn't give it a pass. That doesn't make it right. That doesn't discount it. All it says is that's what the mood was at the time. Same thing with the 80s. Would you call all those 80s movies that had Russians as the evil and unthinking robot villain, would you call those racist? Or because that was the image of the Russians in American pop culture?
I mean, they were racist. They really were. I mean, they portrayed the enemy in an unfavorable light. They portrayed a certain race or nationality of people in an unfavorable light. However, let's be honest, this was during the fucking Cold War. Everything portrayed them in an unfavorable light. And I'm glad, that's one of the things that I like about BioShock, and I've gotten some shit over this. I'm glad the racism is there.
To shine a light on it?
I really am, because, well, if we forget this side of history, we're doomed to repeat it. And we have. In the 1980s, the AIDS scare.
Yep.
AIDS victims were gay men who were thrown into this, you
promiscuous
know,
gay men.
Promiscuous
too.
Gay men who were, you know, out to get their dick wet, and that was about it. And
until
you die.
Something like Ryan White happened.
Exactly.
For those that don't remember, we're going back a little bit. Ryan White was, he was just preteen. I think he was like 12 or 13.
Yeah.
He got AIDS through a blood transfusion, and he was kicked out of school. They wouldn't allow him in school
because right.
this was that era when everyone thought you could get AIDS by using the same toilet seat as an AIDS person. And technically, he didn't even have AIDS at this point. He had HIV.
Right.
Big fucking distinction, by the way.
Yes. At the time, there was not. HIV meant you had AIDS. You were going to die. It was a death sentence.
Well, it's, you know, technically in the esoteric sense, we're all dying. We all have a death sentence at birth.
But when it comes to HIV today, there are drugs to treat it.
You can live a long life.
Exactly. You can be a positive person, meaning you can be pos and live a long life and even have a sexually fulfilling life. And sometimes it's... Most of the pos people I know are actually practice a whole lot safer sex than people who are negative who may be positive and don't know or refuse to know or anything
but
like
that.
But
I just think like some part of our audience may not know who the fuck Ryan
right,
White was.
I understand. But no, Ryan White got AIDS through a blood transfusion. And, well, he got HIV and
he was
AIDS.
Basically ostracized from society, and he rightfully became a media darling. They were
yes.
following his battles, and this, again, in the early days of treating HIV, so he did not live long because they did not have the cocktail or AZT or any of that nonsense,
right.
you know,
right.
any of that stuff yet.
Right.
So he did not live that long, but...
So anyway, our racism goes from blacks to AIDS patients. You know, in the 80s... Fag. It was an insult that was thrown around. I know I threw it around because I was young and didn't.
Fuck,
didn't
I've heard
really
that go back
that.
To the 70s.
Yeah.
Hell, they used that in All in the Family episode.
You know,
when, you know, Archie Bunker said somebody from London was insulting him, and he goes, anyone with that kind of an accent's a fag.
Yeah, you know, it's in, well, hell, it. Insult's been around for a whole lot longer than that. It was used
but
in
I'm just
World
mean,
War
in,
II.
But I mean, that's on TV. So
right.
that shows a certain progression that. You could. There's no way prior to All in the Family you were going to say fag on
right.
TV.
Right.
So I found this list, and it says who are the most offensive movie characters. We're going to go in order and talk about them. The first one is, I haven't seen this movie since I was a kid, Mr. Yaninoshi. Is that how it's pronounced?
Yunioshi.
From Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Right. And again, Breakfast, what year was Breakfast at Tiffany's?
64. Five?
Okay, so only
maybe
you know
only, I'm not 100% on that.
Only 20 years after World War II, and you still have lots and lots of World War II vets out, and everybody's seen the Warner Brothers cartoon where Bugs Bunny is fighting the Japanese man, and the Japanese man is the round glasses, buck teeth.
Bugs Bunny yaps the Japs.
Yep, you know, round glasses, buck teeth,
huge overbite,
eyes, huge overbite. And
he all talk like this.
Yes, and Mr. Yunioshi was the walking incarnation of that. Again, only 20 years after World War II. Guess what? That animosity ain't going away in 20 years. Look at the way people often portray Arabs today.
Yeah, the Arabs are often... I mean, hell... I thought the joke was kind of funny, and I'm going to remember this hadn't happened yet. There was a Married with Children episode. It was just this a throwaway joke that had nothing to do with the plot, okay?
Okay.
Al is trying to sell his car.
Right.
And so he's getting all these weird people coming to the door, and it's just like this montage, you know, with like a white flash between each one, all these just weird people. And one of them is an Arab guy holding like a cartoon bomb, you know, the black circle with the fuse. And he goes, "Pardon me, which way to Chrysler Building?"
Yes.
And I'm like, okay, that's fucking funny.
Yes.
Guess what? That's edited out of all the reruns.
Yeah,
because
it's
offensive.
But yeah, so you're supposed to be offended by Mr. Yunioshi again. Take him out of context, throw him into a show today. Yeah, he's going to be a parody, and he's going to be offensive because he's meant to be offensive. At the time, we were still getting over World War II. Give it a pass. Walk away. Jesus. I mean, it pisses me off when people go, okay, that's it. We're going to have to take racism and wipe it from history. Bullshit.
Racism will go away if we forget we were ever racist.
Exactly.
That's their logic, man.
Bullshit. Shine a light on it. Knock every bit of, you know, knock every leg under from underneath it, and it will go away. This, oh, never mind. Okay.
Dude, this list is going to get worse.
Yeah, you haven't let me see this list because...
Yeah,
because
I know where it's going. You don't.
Holy fuck, number two pisses me off, too.
Uncle Remus. Sorry, okay, now, first of all, Uncle Remus is not racist for when the story takes place.
Exactly.
There really were people like that, and the stories he tells are the stories that ex-slaves told to one another.
Exactly. I mean, he's the wise, fatherly, what a lot of people today would call a Jim Crow nigger.
Yeah, I can see that, and that's why he's considered offensive, I guess.
I guess so.
Again, these people really existed. Uncle Remus, is he a stereotype? Absolutely.
Yes.
Is he a negative stereotype? Absolutely.
Yes.
But not when the movie was made.
Right.
When the movie takes place, he's not a stereotype.
Exactly.
That's what you have to realize.
Plus, you have Disney portraying a black man as a wise grandfatherly type.
So, of course, they will never release this movie.
This is a huge step forward in the, you know, when this movie was released.
Again, early 60s, I think.
Early 60s, late 50s, somewhere around there. Huge step forward to have a black actor take a lead role in Hollywood and be seen as a wise grandfatherly type who is helping to raise white children.
You also have to realize that white actors traditionally played black characters.
Right, blackface.
Through the 40s and that, black people were not allowed on TV unless they were literally the butler.
Right. They had to play a subservient role. There were some black carpenters. There were some black set builders. There were some black electricians even at the time. But you didn't appear on screen. SAG wouldn't let you in.
There was also, this is stage, not screen, Orson Welles. This was one of the projects of his that tanked. And I think this is even pre-Citizen Kane. He did an all-black version of Shakespeare on stage with all black actors. I wonder how in the 30s that didn't go over so well, huh?
I wonder why. But this, again, look at this in context, and it's a huge step forward. Even if they are talking about Briar Rabbit and the Tar Baby, it's a step forward. These are also, these were stories based on slave stories. Deal with it. What's next? Oh, God.
And we go to Shungon from the Aristocats.
Shungon for the aristocrats, that don't remember, it was the piano playing Oriental. It was a Siamese cat.
We are Siamese, if you please.
That was Lady and the Tramp. That was Lady and the Tramp. Yeah.
That was
the cats and Lady and the Tramp.
Okay, I actually confused. I thought that was the We Are Siamese Please one. Okay, Shungon, I confused that.
Shungon was the rhyming piano playing jazz artist cat. He was Siamese, and again, squinty eyes, buck teeth. Didn't have the round glasses because he was a fucking cat.
And he a talker like that.
And he a talker like that. Like a lot of Disney.
Very broken English.
Yes.
English.
And he rhymed in it, and he played a very small part. But again, when did this come out?
60
years. Yeah, 20 years after World War II. We ain't over it.
Not even 20 years after World War II.
Exactly. We ain't over it. And again, also, he's a musician. He's talented.
He's smart.
He's extremely intelligent in the movie. He also puts together the rhymes that other cats can't do. And
not really a negative. He's not a negative character.
You do me a favor. Grab a pair of chopsticks and play the piano with a pair of chopsticks in each hand. See if you can fucking do it. This cat can do that.
And he doesn't even have opposable fucking thumbs.
That's right.
God damn.
God.
Okay, I'll give you this next one, but it was intentionally supposed to be this. Now, I do not like Sacha Baron Cohen. I don't think he's remotely funny. I don't think he's remotely witty.
I enjoyed him for about 5 minutes.
I don't understand why he gets so much traction, because he is a fucking horrendous, in quotes, comedian.
Yeah, I enjoyed him for about 5 minutes, his comedy. Now, I will give him this. His role in Hugo...
I haven't seen Hugo.
You haven't seen Hugo? It's worth seeing. He plays a supporting character. It's actually very good and very well acted.
Well, this one is Bruno from the movie Bruno.
Yes.
You know, the stereotypical fag. That's the only way I can put it.
Gay Eastern European. And we really don't know where he descends from. But yeah, the
fag Eurotrash?
Flamboyant Eastern European.
So yeah. I'll give it that this one is offensive, but again, it was meant to be. It was meant to shine a light on the stereotypes.
Exactly.
So, I mean, I don't know if you'd call that offensive because he was trying to be.
Yeah, people lose, they lose context. The movie Bruno was not funny, but what it did in that one was it kind of shined a line of this is how people in the rest of the world see the United States, and more importantly, see how the United States sees others. If that makes any sense, if you can follow it. So yeah, Bruno was meant to be offensive, so there it was. Duh. Really? Really? Yeah, this one I can see. Guru Maurice Pitka from The Love Guru.
Thankfully, a movie that tanked like you wouldn't fucking believe.
And
but
I've seen it. It's terrible. It's not worth watching. This one, again, offensive because I think...
All it is because this one's not even trying to shine a light on anything.
Yeah.
It's just a stereotype because stereotypes are funny, right?
I guess. I don't know what Mike Myers was thinking with this character, but... Yeah,
or movie.
It was or movie, but yeah, it was a walking stereotype of the basically the Maharishi.
Yeah.
And it meh.
Now this one, yeah, this was offensive, and by the way, the other two that you're thinking of are gonna be on this list too that are connected to this.
Thought so. This would be Watto from The Phantom Menace.
Okay, there's no way this was not written as an indictment of Jews. Watto, he's short, he's got a huge nose, he's money-grubbing, he'll do anything for money, and he a talker like a Jew.
Yeah, really? That's how Jews talk?
No.
I didn't think so.
I can't do a good Jew accent. You do it.
I have met Jews that speak with many, many different accents.
Well, he talks like the stereotypical
Honey, if this
Jew.
This is the one you're thinking about, the old Jewish mother one.
Okay, Watto, there's no way this was not meant to
right.
be... And I'm sorry, George Lucas is not deep enough for me to go, this was meant as some sort of indictment. No. This was just, holy fucking crap, this is racist.
This one I'll give them. I will give them Watto. And it's, yeah, there you go. Oh, well, duh.
The crows in Dumbo.
Duh.
Again, put it in the context. That's the way white America, and that's what Disney was, they were the embodiment of white America, saw black people, were the crows. And technically, while the crows are assholes, not only do they come to Dumbo's aid at the end.
Right.
They're also his inspiration for doing everything.
Yes.
They're kind of positive characters.
Well, it's the depiction of the American Negro as the down-to-earth inspirational character, and it's one that Disney loves. I mean, he uses it in these crows. He uses it in Uncle Remus that we mentioned, and a few others. And yes, it's stereotypical. Yes, it was entertaining, but we're also, you know, this is also coming off of stereotypes of vaudeville and a huge theatrical history of using stereotypes in order to get a character type across.
Are they any more racist than Heckle and Jekyll from Warner Brothers?
No, they're not. I mean, it's the same. It's that down-to-earth American Negro, the freed slave that really is the practical. He may not be too educated, Master, but he is down-to-earth and he knows how to get stuff done. He do.
Yeah. Yes, so.
Yes, so. Yeah, I mean, that was a
right now
character.
We're being racist.
No, we're not. We're illustrating a character stereotype.
And we go back to George Lucas with
the
obvious
Menace.
Asian stereotypes with they talk in the broken English, the English, and the lips don't even match. He says, oh, that was a nod to all those dubbed Japanese movies. No, I think it was a nod to the fact that you couldn't get the fucking dubbing to match, you stupid, ignorant fucking shit. Sorry.
Yes, this one, again, with those in The Phantom Menace, there's no excuse. There really isn't. He's just using
in aliens. 1999 to have those kind of stereotypes? Yeah. No.
No. And yes, you could say that he's using these stereotypes to try and get a character type across, but that had fallen out of practice for at least, well, almost 20 years at the time. So, yeah. No, I'm not giving him that one. Okay. Pie and her mother on Freaky Friday?
they are the absolute stereotypical Japanese restaurant owners.
Okay.
You know, the broken English, the not understanding what you're saying, the, you know, and then I think they have a line, the customers have a line like something like just making up stuff, and they go, yes, sir, good choice, sir. And you know, that kind of stuff, that it's just as stereotypically quote unquote offensive as you can be.
But again, maybe they were trying to be funny. Maybe they were trying to, again, use the stereotype to get a character type across and failing miserably, but let's move on.
In that case, I would call it probably just cinematic shorthand.
Cinematic shorthand, okay. Yeah.
And then,
really?
Okay. This one, now, I'm not a Farley Brothers fan to begin with, okay?
Okay, okay.
But I know every fat person that I know that's seen Shallow Hal is offended at the movie, and the Farley Brothers go, but see, we're trying to show you what inner beauty is, and we're going to do that by making the most offensive nonstop barrage of fat jokes that you've ever seen. That somehow says you have inner beauty, right? And that also, just think about this, and I'm going into the mind of the people who write this kind of thing. What they're saying is all fat people are ugly, but their inner beauty is a nice, skinny, hot person. That's kind of is a little offensive there when you think about it, huh?
Yeah.
That the inner beauty can't be the fat person. No, no, no. Inner beauty is the skinny person, because beauty is skinny is beauty.
And to those of us that like our girls with a little meat on
bones, I'm into the BBW thing.
You're one of those. Me, not quite so much, but at the same time, pencil thin is disgusting to me. Like if I go to
if you can
you,
stick your dick in her and then you can see the bump come through her stomach,
yeah,
dude, eat a chick, yeah, eat a sandwich,
yeah,
okay?
Have a sandwich, but this one again.
I can see how it's
offensive. How it's offensive,
you know, because they go, oh, it's a progressive movie. We're showing fat people in a positive light. How? It's a nonstop barrage of all fat people want to do are eat and are lazy.
Yes.
How is that a positive showing of what fat people are like?
Yeah.
I will not get, no, that one, fuck you.
Yes.
This one, Mark Walson from Soul Man, which is C. Thomas Howell. He basically dyes his skin black and tries to go to black college on a black scholarship. Now, technically, it's offensive, and he does it, you know, the movie embraces all the black stereotypes for comedy. First of all, you got to realize it's a comedy.
Yes.
And the point of the movie is what a white person thinks a black person is. That's the point. Like how he talks, oh brother, you know, and he eats watermelon and, you know, always trying to give high fives. And the whole point is breaking down the stereotype and shining a light on the way white people think black people are. All the black people in this movie are the dignified, serious characters. And also, this movie's based on a true story.
Yep.
Not sure how offensive it can be when it really happened.
Yeah, it can still be offensive, but, you know, that's, again, put it in context. Yes, he is stereotypical. Yes, he is offensive at the beginning of his adventure. He really is, and I'm can't give it a pass there. The good guys are the black people who are like, sir, what are you doing? Why are you acting this way?
Why are you running around with watermelon calling everyone bro and trying to high five?
Exactly. And you know, and it's breaking down that stupidity and that racism is the point of the movie.
Well, see, what the problem everyone had with this movie was the fact that it was all, oh my God, you remember 86.
Yeah.
In today's era, they were actually going to do a movie with a white actor doing the entire, you know, 85% of the film in blackface.
Yeah. Man, deal with it. That's my answer is deal with it. Yes, a little bit. Now, here we go.
I've never seen Norbit, so I don't know.
Yeah, I
don't know.
L'Amour from Norbit, which is...
It's Eddie Murphy playing a fat, sassy black woman.
Yeah.
Well, okay, it even goes back to like something Doug Walker pointed out. I can't believe I'm saying something positive about Doug Walker, but... Like in that new Looney Tunes show. Remember the witch?
Yes.
She's now a sassy black woman.
Yes,
in that
she
new
is.
Show, she's a sassy black woman.
Yes, she is.
And, that's and a little offensive to me.
I can tell you right now, June, who it, voice of Rocky Squirrel, did the original voice of Witch Hazel.
Which I couldn't remember her last name.
And it's June Foray.
Okay.
Pissed.
Because I'm sorry, Witch Hazel is not a sassy black woman.
No, Witch Hazel is June Foray. You can't have anyone else doing Witch Hazel.
And then whip away and leave the hair.
Leave the hairpins floating. Yeah. Yes.
But okay, so I haven't seen Norbit, so I can't really speak to this one. I can't really
speak on this one either. But it's Eddie Murphy playing a big, fat black woman. I'm sure there are some offensive moments in there. But yeah. You know,
and Mammy and Prissy from Gone with the Wind. Okay, people, how many times do I have to say historical context? Not only for when this movie was made, but for when it takes place.
Exactly.
It's accurate on both fucking counts.
And the thing that, now the list says the thing that they find offensive is that they're almost happy to be slaves. Now, I have a second mother, basically. Is a little tiny black woman from, she grew up in Montgomery, Alabama.
You've spoken of her before.
Yes, her name is Emma. And her grandmother was a slave. Her mother was born into slavery, and Emma is the first generation of her family to be born a free black woman. Emma's grandmother, after the slaves were emancipated, stayed with the white family in order to care for the children that she had grown to love, in order to take care of the house, and she didn't know what else to do. There was a segment of black people after the emancipation that didn't know where to go, didn't know what to do, couldn't get jobs. And so
it's kind of like, okay, now you're free.
Yeah.
Okay, what do we do now?
Exactly. And there was a segment of black people, and black historians hate it when you talk about this, but there was a segment of black people that wanted to bring slavery back because they were taken care of. They could work, they could have families. You know, they weren't real big on the whipping and the selling and the splitting up and all the bad parts of slavery, but they stuck with the families that they were emancipated from because they had nowhere to go and they were comfortable. Especially what they would call the house niggers. They stuck around like you wouldn't believe because they had grown attached to the little white children. They had become part of the family and they didn't know what to do. That's what we've got with Mammy and Prissy.
Yeah, kind of. But again, historical context. Put it in it, fuckers.
Exactly.
All right, next we go to... We're back to George Lucas, Jar Jar Binks. He is a walking minstrel show. Yes. And the fact that his voice actor's even black, that just kind of... Really? You know? You didn't find anything wrong with the... I mean, technically, yes, when he recorded the dialogue, he hadn't seen the animation, but you couldn't tell that... this is kind of racist, huh?
Yeah, it's almost a Jamaican dialogue. Almost.
Dialect, and you mean?
Dialect, thank you. I can't give Lucas a pack. You even talk cinematic shorthand, but to come in and go, okay, here's your comedy relief. Instead of a trash can and a flaming fag, we've got a minstrel show. I can't give him a pass on this one. I can't. I mean, it's even if you start to yell cinematic shorthand, no, you had a series of three movies planned. Guess what? You can develop even side characters. Ugh.
And then we come to Birth of a Nation.
Okay, number one. Do you know who funded the majority of this movie?
The Klan.
Yes. Do you think that... If you've got a movie funded majorly by the Ku Klux Klan, that it's going to say that black people are wonderful and that Jews are great?
There's not even a black person in the movie. There's no black people in the movie. The black people in the movie are white dudes in blackface.
Right, right. But again, put it in context. Yes, it was funded by the Klan. Yes, it played up stereotypes like you wouldn't believe. Yeah, it's racist. It really is.
But it's also...
What do you expect?
Also, let's take the race angle out just for a second. It's also a phenomenal film that broke barriers in what you could and could not do with a camera and it invented techniques that are still being used today.
Yes.
So on that level, the film deserves to be in cinematic history.
Yes.
And not some forgotten footnote. It's just a kind of a shame that it's such a propaganda piece is the only way I can put it.
And again, putting it into context. Realize that it is a propaganda piece. Realize who funded it. Realize what went on. Study the technique. If you're really that offended by the racism that's there, which I frankly am not, I look back on it and go, oh, how quaint. You know?
It's a silent film, for God's sake.
Exactly. But, you know, study the technique. This deserves to be looked at. And if you want to look at it from a racial history standpoint, it deserves to be studied as that too.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot erase racism from this country's history and expect it to go away.
Well, and cinema, I think, is a perfect encapsulation of their various time periods of what the racial boundaries were. Like, I squeeze Quentin Tarantino's balls whenever I get an opportunity. He, being in his egotistical, pinheaded little mind, he thinks Django Unchained single-handedly restarted the race debate in America. First of all, the ego of that statement, Scott. By the way, that's a quote.
Wow. The
ego of that statement is just massive, that Tarantino really does think he is as good as people say he is. That's sickening right there. But Django Unchained, I'll give it this. It's a really racist movie. It's kind of set during this pre-Civil War, like 2 years before the Civil War in the South. There's no way you're not going to make a racist movie doing that.
Exactly. Let's take it away from Django Unchained, because it really isn't. It's a good film.
It's okay.
I'll give him that. I realize that's high praise for you and Quentin Tarantino. But I think it's a good film. The racism is there. Duh.
Kind of has to be.
The one that amazes me every time I hear it or see it, and this really was a really bad film, the Will Smith version of Black.
The Will Smith version of Black.
No. Giant robot spider western steampunk.
Wild Wild West.
Thank you. Wild Wild West. There they use racism as, I mean, Will Smith is always cracking the look, you're half a man jokes. The main villain is cracking the, hey, look, you're a black man joke. That's racism for comedy effect, and it doesn't work most of the time. Look at the dialogue in that movie. It's terrible.
Well, everything in that movie is terrible.
Exactly. The one where racism is handled very well to amazing comic effect. Mel Brooks, Blazing Saddles.
Oh, yeah. I mean, okay, Cleavon Little was amazing in the role. I still think it would have been really different if Richard Pryor had played that part since he co-wrote it. But Cleavon Little was so brilliant. The perfect scene that illustrates this is the scene after the old, you know, this is after he's holding the gun to his head. Y'all better back off or I'm going to shoot this nigga in the head. Won't somebody please help that man? Okay, that's a brilliant scene in and of itself. But then when he's walking down the street, he sees that old lady. He's like, good morning, ma'am. She goes, up yours, nigger. And then later she brings him a pie, you know, after he saves the town. I'm sorry about the up yours, nigger. And then she starts to leave and she kind of comes back and goes, nobody will have to know I was nice to you, right? He's like, no, ma'am, nobody has to know. That's a perfect indictment right there, isn't it?
Yes.
No, ma'am, nobody has to know that you've been nice to me.
Or the scene when they're at the Klan rally. And he's like, oh, I got to wash my hands.
Yeah. Or even how he gets the Klan outfits. He jumps out, where the white women at?
Exactly. And I mean, and these are racist views at the time. It's racism. It's stereotypical, used to beautiful comic effect. That the jokes still stand up today. By the way, 98% of those jokes were written by Richard Pryor, a black man, I'll have you know.
Really?
Yes, I know. Bill Cosby, too.
You'd never know.
You'd never. Never. But
well, okay, then how about when a much more serious movie tackles something like American History X? Very serious in tone. Now, I cannot think that it was easy for Edward Norton, Edward Furlong, Ethan Suplee. And I'm not trying to go, oh, it was hard on the white actors. But to actually have to constantly call your coworkers niggers and then go and sit down on a lunch table with them, that can't be an easy thing to do.
Depends on the acting crowd.
Or something like Rosewood. Mostly black cast, but then you've got people like Bruce McGill and John Voight and Michael Rooker, who are nigger. Black cast, black director, black crew. That can't be easy, can it?
I'd be a little intimidated.
You know?
It'd be like, cut. Okay, terribly sorry, terribly sorry, terribly sorry, sorry, terribly sorry, sorry, terribly sorry.
And there are some people that are going to turn that around and go, oh, of course you think it was hard on the white folks. It's not, clearly not hard on the black folks to have to hear nigger all day, right?
Yeah, I'm sure that would be equally as hard to constantly be, especially in either a movie or a series or something like that, where you do play a second-class citizen. To put yourself in... I mean, look at the cast of Roots. To throw yourself into what, for the first half of that miniseries, really is a second-class citizen that's treated like crap, and then to turn around after cut is yelled and...
Go out to lunch with them or hang out.
Go out to lunch or hang out with your fellow actor. I realize it's part of acting is being able to put that character aside, but part of being a method actor is not being able to put that character aside.
Well, let's go back to American History X for a second. The scene at the dinner table where he's fighting with Elliot Gould, obviously a Jew.
Obviously.
And he pulls his shirt down and shows the swastika on his chest. He goes, do you know what that means, you fucking Jew? I will cut your fucking Shylock nose off and stick it up your ass. And you go... My God, Elliot Gould, I don't know, that had to have been hard to sit through multiple takes of that kind of thing.
Exactly. And, you know, don't get me wrong, there's also, throughout history, there has been the incredibly defiant act of forgiveness. I'm terrible at thinking of historical references, but I remember I was talking to a rabbi recently, and we were talking about Jewish history and everything like that. And I said, how do you reconcile this? Green Bay and this part of Wisconsin there's a very heavy German population.
Yeah.
Here.
Yeah. Well, even if you go more up north near my place,
exactly,
it gets more German, more Belgian. We got a lot of Belgians.
Exactly. And I said, how do you reconcile this? And he says, that's part of being a good Jew. That's part of being a man that exemplifies how God will act.
Well, okay. Let's leave movies and stuff aside for a moment.
Okay.
Let's go into, I won't even call this pop culture, culture. How do we still have something like Uncle Ben's white rice or Aunt Jemima maple syrup?
Well,
those are still clearly stereotypes. And, I'm about as un-PC as you can get.
Yeah.
I mean, look at the Hustler jokes I sent you that I pitched to Hustler.
Yes.
Those are about as un-PC as you can get.
Right.
And even I am still a little surprised that they're using Uncle Ben and Aunt Jemima still.
Well, also, corporately, as corporations, I don't know if you've noticed how Uncle Ben, if you remember Uncle Ben in the 70s, Uncle Ben in the 70s may as well have been called Uncle Remus. He had the cap, he had the beard, he was that wise, grandfatherly, cinematic shorthand character.
Okay.
Nowadays, he's wearing a suit, he's clean cut, he's got a decent haircut, and they're really distancing themselves of going, Uncle Ben is a decent mascot, and he is a rice magnate who just happens to be a black man.
What about Aunt Jemima?
Aunt Jemima's done the same thing. Because if you
I know they don't use the bottles anymore that are shaped like the Mammy. I remember those when I was a kid.
Right.
You'd buy it in a Mammy-shaped glass bottle.
Because they were competing against Mrs. Butterworth, who was basically an English housemaid.
White, though.
Right, a white English housemaid that was filled with yummy syrup. And Aunt Jemima was trying to compete with Mrs. Butterworth, so they made the Mammy-shaped bottle. They got rid of the Mammy-shaped bottle.
Yeah.
They've gotten rid of her Mammy look. She, again, also looks... She's starting to look like a business-wise black grandmother.
Okay, well, then what about the sassy black woman that movies use for the cinematic shorthand? Because, you know, every movie has got that sassy black woman if it takes place in the city.
That's cinematic shorthand that's been around forever.
But is that not offensive? Or is it just a cheap laugh? A cheap laugh, not a laugh.
I think it's a cheap laugh, and I think it's especially... Well, let's look at two shows that had sassy black... We have The Facts of Life, very white show.
Pretty much.
Right, but then you have Tootie. And Tootie is the sassy black woman that, because she's a sassy black woman, can get away with saying what us white folks are thinking. And then you've got 227. 227.
Oh, I hate Jackie!
Yeah. A show obviously made with a black cast for a black audience at the time when TV was starting to go, okay, here's the black things and here's the white things and we'll keep them separate because in society they're separate.
Well, then how about something like early UPN? Well, homeboys in outer space! Yeah, yo, we're homeboys and way in the motherfucking Enterprise, yo!
Okay, the thing about UPN, early UPN, was this was during the rise of hip-hop culture. And that's one thing that I will give hip-hop, and that when people look at me and go, well, rap and hip-hop, that's obviously a black thing. Not anymore. It may have gotten started in the black communities in the inner cities. Now hip-hop has plenty of white people, and it's more of a fashion thing.
And the same thing happened to that happened to punk by the early 80s.
Right. I mean, early punk...
Punk meant something in the fucking 70s through 82, man.
Right, and it was a predominantly white art form.
Yeah.
And then black people discovered punk, and you ended up with bands like Living Color.
Or Bad Brains.
Or Bad Brains, who... You know, things integrate with time, which is why racism is stupid.
Hey, I'm not a racist. I hate everyone equally.
I know. You've said that before, and it's been just as funny every time you've said it.
Fuck you. But, you know, I don't like the whole sassy black woman thing. Just like a big trope in a lot of the black movies, like especially the Tyler Perry movies or movies of that ilk, is the really uptight, nerdy white person, because that's what all white people are like, right, Scott?
Yeah. And again, this is cinematic shorthand. It's kind of funny because on one hand, you have liberal Hollywood going down with stereotypes, down with
racism. And you have screenwriters going, stereotypes is all we know.
Exactly. And you have, that's, I think part of that is why Urkel was so shocking. Because if you look at Steve Urkel, he is a stereotypically white man, played by Jaleel White, who is black. And I think that's why he was a standout character, is because he is a walking white stereotype in the black community, played by a black man. It was out of step.
Well, do you consider something racist, like a lot of people... Again, they took it out of historical context, something like Dances with Wolves. That's so racist against Indians. Oh, my God.
Hey, guess what?
that wasn't racist against Indians. Jesus. Or a lot of people like to read too much into things, like with Dances with Wolves or with Last Samurai or something.
Can I address Dances with Wolves for a moment?
Okay.
The reason the racism came out or that allegations of racism against Dances with Wolves came out was because there were a lot of tribes, especially in the Southwest, in the Midwest, and stuff like that, who went, our tribe never acted that way.
So that means all Indians never acted that way.
The Sioux did! Which is, yeah, and that's the tribe he's dealing with. It's the Sioux. And
well, this one, they love to trot out as a, oh, this is just how racist Hollywood is. Like, what was that movie with Michelle Pfeiffer where she went into the inner city and fixed the school? Dangerous Minds.
Dangerous Minds, yes.
Where it was, oh, all us black people, we can't do anything. And all these black teachers and the black principal, it takes a white person to come in and fix all the Negro problems. And you go, oh, Jesus Christ, talk about reading into something that's not fucking there.
And my answer to that is...
Stand By Me.
Stand By Me. And what was that the one with Edward James Olmos?
No, that was... Shit.
Yeah, but it basically an Hispanic man comes in and
fixes
a class.
Well, and then there was the Morgan Freeman one where he came in as the principal and fixed...
Right.
All the, you never see that thrown around. Oh, it takes a black man to fix white problems, but no. Oh, it takes a white person to fix all the black problems? Yeah. Oh, then that's racist.
I think part of the problem with America today is that there are pockets in every social strata. There are pockets of black people, pockets of Native Americans, pockets of gay people, pockets of feminists, pockets of misogynists, pockets of these people who are looking to be offended.
Well, but then there's also always...
And they get very loud.
But there are always really good ways to point out the stupidity of those things. Like, remember the TV show Action with Jay Mohr?
No, but okay.
That he had an amazing line where he was trying to reform his image. And so he's like giving a whole bunch of money to some clinic that's supposed to deal with German measles. And he goes, and these are German measles. That means they're brutal and efficient and they won't stop. And so you're laughing right now and you go, that is a funny way to point out the idiocy of that stereotype, isn't it?
Well, I mean, look at harmless shows like Top Gear. They had a crossover with Australian Top Gear where they kept calling the Australians Bruce I forget what the Australians called the Englishman, but it was a stereotypically limey name. And they played on these stereotypes with one another. They had a crossover with German Top Gear, where they were like, we're now going to play a game, and it has lots of rules. You like rules. And stuff like that, where they played off of the stereotypes. And this is, I think Europe is so damn progressive because they go, yeah, they're stereotypes, and they're often stereotypes for a reason, and they're there. Let's have fun with them.
And see, I like when I do Live Nude Geeks with Mike Robinson, he's like a 40-year-old black man. He makes more black jokes than I do. It kind of frees me up to go, you know what? I can make a black joke and it not be a racist joke.
Yeah. I mean, look, stereotypes are cinematic shorthand and they're played up and they're often blown up in this huge spotlight. They're there for a reason, though.
All stereotypes have not a grain, but a chunk of reality to them. But that doesn't mean every single person is like that. A perfect one, I hate the movie, but Lethal Weapon 2. When Danny Glover's, you know, pretending to be a black man who wants to go back to South Africa. God, just remember, apartheid still existed when this movie came out. And he's like, I want to go back and join my brothers in that. And the white South African's like, but you're black. He's like, yeah. And they're just, you're black. You don't want to go to South Africa.
Yeah. Trust me. You don't want to go to South Africa if you're black.
And I thought that was a hilarious scene, but you're black.
Yeah.
It's like, really? Thank you. I did not notice prior to this.
You know, and the truth is I hate the term African-American because black Americans have about as much attachment to Africa as I do to Scotland.
No, I want to see a white man born and bred in South Africa move to America, become an American citizen, and demand to be called an African American and watch Al Sharpton's head explode when he has to be called an African American.
Yeah.
I want that. Or an Egyptian to do that. Egypt isn't Africa, people.
Yeah.
They can be African Americans too.
Yeah, Africa isn't one country. There's Sudan, and at one point the Congo, and apparently there's a new South Sudan, and Zimbabwe.
Yeah,
in there
it's
somewhere.
Like, okay, we got less than a minute, but I'm sure off is racist to our detractors who, yes, Scott, we do have some. I get some hate mail sometimes. We do. And it's not all about me. Some people don't like you. Imagine that.
No, I've never gotten one single piece of hate mail. Everyone loves me. I'm great, and I have a gigantic penis.
I'm done.
Okay. No, I'm sure. I'm yeah. Thanks for taking apart your mic and popping everyone's speakers. I'm sure we came across as racist in this episode. I know we did. The truth is, you cannot take it out of context. You cannot hide racism, and I say we don't. If we want to stop it, don't. Shine a light on it and knock its legs out from under it and call it stupid, which is what it is. Good night, everybody.